This is Alan from Gallant Knight Games, and you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Hey everybody, this is John.
And this is Vince.
And you're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Creating legends one die at a time.
Hello everybody, this is episode 66 of the Legends of Tabletop podcast. We have Alan Barr with us tonight from Gallant Knight Games, as you just heard. So thank you for coming on, sir.
My pleasure, I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. You've got a couple days left on your Kickstarter, so we're kind of getting you in under the wire here. So we're glad we're still able to have you on.
I'm glad to be here. We're coming down to the end, so it's exciting.
All right. Before we get in and start talking about your Kickstarter, we do have a segment here at the front end called Something Cool. So what cool stuff do you have going on right now?
Oh, I mean, we just announced a new role-playing game we're doing after the current one. Spy RPG, which is a personal genre favorite of mine, so I'm pretty excited to be leading a project there. I'm trying to think what else.
What's the name? Come on.
It's called Cold Shadow. Sorry, there's a press release on gallantnightgames.com. You can go read it. It's a crazy amount of talent. We licensed a rule set that was very influential in my design philosophy from John Wick Presents, the Blood and Honor rule set, and we've got some crazy talented people, so...
Awesome. That's pretty cool. I actually saw that tweet earlier today, so it was one of the questions on the list, but way down on the bottom.
Yeah, no, that was probably the big news for today.
Cool. Good deal. Well, we'll look forward to having you on the show again when that Kickstarter comes rolling around.
We'll be here, no problem. When we can schedule enough in advance this time, we won't have any issues.
Yeah, right. Hopefully you won't switch jobs again after we...
Yeah, let's not do that again.
Was it, was that intentional? Were you forward-looking and trying to change things up, or was this some kind of sudden?
No, I left my old job and came to the new one willingly. It wasn't like I was let go or terminated or anything. But, it just kind of, everything, it was Gen Con and then job switching and then traveling for the new job and then a Kickstarter, and it's been a whirlwind.
That's crazy. I don't have anything cool. I've actually had a pretty shitty couple of days, so we'll just gloss right over that, and we'll run right into the show.
All right, fair enough.
Cool. This is your second Kickstarter. It's the first was for the main rule set, Tiny Frontiers.
That's correct.
Cool, and this one's called Mecha and Monsters. And it's the first standalone expansion. So how did that come about to jump from the main core set to this standalone?
Well, the main core set kickstarted successfully. We hit all our stretch goals. We unlocked everything. We delivered the game to all our backers. We delivered digital copies 5 months early, physical copies 4 months early. And in the finalizing process... Tiny Frontiers was always meant to be sort of a generic toolboxy rule set. We don't try to do everything. We don't do everything. So we have like, here's rules for spaceships, but it's really only one tiny spaceship. And, you know, if you want to do more, you got to figure it out yourself. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we had rules for mecha, but they were, you know, one kind of mecha and it was pretty limited. And, you know, we were finishing, we'd locked all the text down, and we were sending it off to the editors and everything, and I was looking at it, and I was going, oh, what I wouldn't give to have an extra 10 pages in this chapter. And so, I'm like, well, there's always free PDF downloads, or like a buck or whatever, right? So, I write something, and I wrote it, and then I wrote it, and it was like 40 pages, which is the length of the rules in Tiny Frontiers. So I was like, oh, this is basically as a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, we could get awesome art... But we have to run a kick. Oh, I guess we're doing a Kickstarter.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's neat when you can, you know, sit down and be like, oh, I'm going to hammer out a couple of words here, and it turns into like a whole nother project. That's, you know, it's good then because you're in, you're invested, you know, you're excited about it. So that's good for everybody who's interested in giant fighting robots and scary monsters.
Exactly. It kind of just happened well.
Good deal. And like you said, the the core part of the original book's only about 40 pages, which I took a look through, and thank you for sending that over to us. And I'm thinking, man, like 138 pages. And then I start going through it. I'm like, wait a minute, three quarters of this book is all like little scenario hooks and everything. I'm like, oh crap.
Yeah. Well, we were serious about the minimalist part.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, it's, you know, I don't want to say it's like an original thing that we do differently, because I'm going to say that and then it'll be a lie. And somebody will come out of the woodwork and be like, oh, actually, you ripped off this idea. So I'm going to say, I think we do it pretty well, but I'm pretty sure it's not just our idea. But around the Tiny Frontiers line, what we do are micro settings, which are small 6 to 10 page, high level, kind of not super detailed settings to plan that are designed so the GM can pull the book, glance over a couple pages, and just run a game right away.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny Frontiers is a con game. It's for one-offs, conventions, short campaigns.
Sure. Can you tie all those little mini scenarios together? Is there any sort of theme throughout them at all, or no?
Well, they're all science fiction, as the nature of the game. But, you know, there's no particular thread, but in the home testing and stuff, all of those scenarios have been different star systems. So you could bounce from one to the other if you wanted to, yeah.
Cool. All right, sounds good. And the Kickstarter that is coming up also features a slew of micro settings as well, so by some pretty famous people. So that's cool.
I think so. I mean, you know, relative terms of famous for anybody in the RPG industry, I suppose.
Well, RPG, yeah.
we got some really talented folks again, and we've unlocked 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 right now. Is that right? Plus a bonus one, plus, yeah, so 9, maybe 10. I'm looking at my Kickstarter right now to get a list.
I usually have it up. All right. You have the cover art by Tan Ho Sim, which looks amazing. Have you worked with him before, or is this first time?
So I was the lead designer for the Planet Mercenary role-playing game that was on Kickstarter last year. We raised, we were the 18th highest funded role-playing game Kickstarter of all time. We are no longer there. We have been pushed down the pack by crazy successful people, which, great. You know what? You're going to be beat, get beat by the best, right?
Right, right.
But he did some work for that game. I'm not the art director. I was just the rules guy.
Sure.
But I saw his work and it came across. And when I was looking for somebody, he emailed me. I think I posted somewhere and he emailed me and I was like, oh, I know this guy's work. And he's fantastic. I mean, he just kills it. He's knocking it out of the park with every piece we preview.
Mm-hmm. How many other artists do you have working on the project for you?
None.
Oh, none. Yeah, that's it, huh?
he's that good.
Okay. Is the interior illustrated at all? Is it essentially just cover stuff, or
nope? There will be big full page illustrations like the cover inside the book.
Nice, very good. Good on him for committing to a big project like that.
Oh, he's pretty excited. He keeps asking me, "Can I do more?" And I keep having to tell him, "Well, I have a budget." No, you can't. And he's gonna wait.
Right. Well, that's cool. So you know, you have a minimalist setting here. Is that your sort of preferred approach to RPGs, because you also have Tiny Dungeons as well, right?
I didn't make Tiny Dungeons. I licensed the core rule set from the guy who created Tiny Dungeons.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yep. Nope. We definitely made some changes to the game system, you know, to fit the style of play we were trying to invoke a little bit better. And Mechas and Monsters is a pretty divergent system from even Tiny Frontiers. Like, if you read Tiny Frontiers, you'll see really minimalist things like all attacks do 1 damage, nobody has more than 8 hit points, nobody has less than, like, 4, you know, characters are 3 or 4 items and they're done. Mm-hmm. Mechas and Monsters, it's not, like, advanced Tiny Frontiers, but it kind of is. We do things like variable damage now. Mm-hmm. We do things like armor, stuff that didn't exist in the first edition or the first version. This stuff's all layered into the game to make it deeper.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I noticed that in the original rule book that it's like, hey, your armor is for flavor. You could say you have on whatever.
Right. Yeah. And in the giant robot version, armor does do stuff.
Okay. Makes sense with giant fighting robots that you'd have armor have some impact on what's going on.
Yes. And it does.
Does it, and I think it said on the Kickstarter page, you can also play the kaiju as well?
Yep. It's both sides of the coin. You can totally do anything. You can King Kong it up. You could Godzilla it up. You can Mecha Godzilla. You can do transforming robots. You can do transforming kaiju. You can do combiners for both. You can do hybrids of techno kaiju.
Cool.
You name it. It's there.
Nice. The way that the rules are kind of set up, it reminds me a little bit of Fate, and that you're having like certain aspects and like certain traits and things. It kind of, to me at least a little bit, has that sort of flavor to it, seems like.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I would say the core RPG mechanic is probably a little more traditional than Fate's.
Yeah.
I think when you get the way the dice rolling and everything, but the aspects and the limited narrative style options, definitely a lot of Fate influence.
And with the dice rolling mechanic, it reminded me a little bit of Gumshoe or say like Shadowrun, as far as, you know, D6s, you're trying to hit a target number. It's interesting with the, you know, the advantage disadvantage with, you know, like fifth edition coming out right now.
Right.
It reminded me of that a little bit, which I thought was cool. Seems like 5 and 6 is a hard number to hit though.
You know, yeah, but it works out fine. Like the averages, I've done the math. The averages actually come out really well balanced.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes you think about it too. So you want to try to put yourself in a more advantageous position,
right?
You know, at least thinking of combat for sure. You
definitely try to get creative.
Yeah, right. So it I think would lend itself to, you know, more engagement in the game and in the story, because you're having to like, all right, how am I want to, you know, want to get that extra die? So what am I going to do?
Right, and it's you know, we wrote it so it's easy to learn. It's easy to, I say we wrote it. The guy who originally wrote the rule set, Smoking Salamander Games, I was just super impressed. I backed the original Kickstarter for Tiny Dungeon. And when our biggest focus, we wrote a bunch of stuff. I mean, we probably could have filled up a 100-page book with just the rules we wrote around this. And we kept stripping pieces out going, okay, no, this doesn't work. Or this. And our core thing was, if I can't teach this to somebody in under 5 minutes, I've failed the game at its core. Right, like I should be able to pull this out, throw it on the table with, you know, a kid who's 5 or 6, and be able to teach them to play this game,
mm-hmm.
because that's how minimalist it should feel. And so, you know, I have a buddy who he has a bunch of young kids, and he was looking for an RPG for him, and he was asking me what I recommend. He hadn't played RPGs for 15 years. And I was like, well, I gave him, you know, there's No Thank You Evil, there's Adventurous Maximus, you know. I was like, but you know, if you really, I think the best one you're going to find is Tiny Dungeon. And he loved it. And he was like, man, you know what I wish they had? Science fiction. And I'm like, oh, well, you're in luck.
There you go. Step in to fill that gap.
Right. Well, you know, there's a need. I was there.
Mm-hmm. And I think it lends itself, because it's so minimalist, to a more cinematic style of play, almost like, you know, approaching it like a movie, sort of like, what is it? Wushu? You know,
yeah,
just that overarching kind of like, you know, let's get in there and, you know, flip, you know, Jackie Chan up the walls and, you
right.
know, do all these crazy things.
Yeah, it definitely lends itself to a stunt mechanic style of play if you want to run it that way.
Do you enjoy a crunchy system, you know, as a player or a GM, like, you know, 4th edition or Rogue Trader, anything by Fantasy Flight?
I love RPGs. Like, I have shelves upon shelves of RPGs. Like, It's a little awkward to have to explain to people, like, oh, you have a lot of books. Well, let me explain. Yes, you're right. I have a lot of books, but they're not just for reading.
Right.
I have so many that I have a spreadsheet, so I don't accidentally buy the same game twice.
Oh, jeez.
Because I have done that already. So I have to have a spreadsheet in my Google Drive so I can access it wherever I go. Like, oh, this is a good deal. Do I own this game?
Mm-hmm.
Invariably.
Smart.
Right.
I was going to say, smartphone comes in handy there.
Right. Of course, I'd always have it in my wall, like, unfold the paper. Here's 11 sheets, you know, all right.
Oh, jeez.
I enjoy crunchy games, yeah. I mean, I've ran the Dark Heresy First Edition system in a lot of its aspects over the years. Scion from White Wolf is a personal favorite. But I definitely also enjoy the more narrative games. Fiasco is a very popular choice among my fun group, the one I don't play test with. Mm-hmm. And we're actually playing Pendragon right now on Fridays.
Okay.
So and that's
how long have you been doing that?
I've run Pendragon off and on for years. This group just started this Friday with new characters. They've all played in some aspect before, but we're going to attempt to get through the Great Pendragon campaign, all 90 years of it.
Nice. So that's cool.
We're in it for the 90 session long haul.
And, it's like running, Terror on the Orient Express whatever that Cthulhu one's called. I forget.
A Terror on the Orient Express, yeah. Okay. Or Knight's Black Agents, the Dracula dossier.
Mm-hmm. Yep, brand new with Ken Hite.
Yep, you got to commit. But that's what we're trying now. So we just started that. We started it because we had a Monday group that had been doing it for a while, and a couple weeks ago they picked a bad fight and they got killed. Because they decided to attack a giant by one-on-one. Like, they kept just, riding him by themselves and he kept killing them and they didn't get it. But, so they decided, maybe we should take a break. And so we stopped the Pendragon campaign on Monday. So now on Fridays, that's what we're playing.
How many different groups do you have that you're playing with?
Oh, all right. So I have two different Monday groups. We play alternate weeks. I have a Wednesday group. I have a Thursday group. I have a Friday group. I have an off and on Saturday group, and we have a Sunday group. I play a lot of role playing games.
Does your wife play at all?
She does. She plays in two of those groups.
Okay. Okay. So you're lucky then.
Yes. Yeah. She enjoys it. She's the other half of the company by far. She just doesn't love the publicity circuit part of it. That's my job because she's the one.
Sure.
To do it.
Yep. Well, that's what Kickstarter is all about, getting in there and pounding the pavement and doing the podcasts and all that stuff.
And that's my job, so. But she owns the company. She helps pick the games we make. She helps make the games. She's playtests some. She does a lot of the, hey, this is stupid, Alan, dial it back.
We always need that, I guess, right?
she's great at it.
She probably doesn't hold back either.
she knows when to hold back. She knows, maybe I should just let him have this today and I can get after him tomorrow.
There you go. Are you guys focused pretty much entirely on RPGs with the company? Are you guys looking at doing any sort of board gaming or anything like that?
Yeah, so we're actually planning to do a Kickstarter for a board game soon, in the next couple months, hopefully.
Oh, cool.
But the first two releases have been RPGs. They're the games I enjoy playing the most, and I find that if I'm not passionate about what I'm making, I just don't do it, so...
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably always be a primarily RPG focused company, but definitely we want to do sub board games. Always diversify.
Yeah, absolutely. With so many game groups, so many games going on, how hard is it to get the time to fit all that stuff in between work and being married and creating games and playtesting games?
I get pretty busy. it's just a priority of making time, wake up early, right? Get home from work, right? Just the choice between I can sit in front of my TV and, binge Netflix, or I can write. It's just a matter of choosing the writing.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say that's a really – any job's like that, though, right? It's a matter of prioritizing what you're doing over the other options.
For sure. I forgot the hell I was going to say now. That happens. That's fine.
It'll come back to you when you start another question.
Yeah, probably. So you have Tiny Frontiers, you've got Mecha and Monsters, and you were also worked on, like I said, Planet Mercenary. I'm sensing a theme here with the sci-fi.
It's funny. I had this conversation with my wife about how I didn't want us to get pigeonholed into only science fiction. there are fantasy games in development. Like I said, the next game is going to be Cold War espionage. So that'll definitely not be science fiction, though obviously it'll be modern. There's a Cthulian dark fantasy game.
Oh, nice.
That uses a variation on the engine I wrote that powers Planet Mercenary, actually.
Hmm, okay.
We signed with the guy who's making, we're going to publish for him on his behalf, He's making a samurai role-playing game. So we'll be publishing that with him. He's worked on all Robert Denton. He's worked on all our projects. He's a fantastic guy. He's my go-to graphic designer for role-playing games. And he worked for Alderac Entertainment, AEG, for a long time.
Oh, okay.
On Legend of the Five Rings. So,
is that going to be coming to Kickstarter as well? Or
At this point, we got to go to Kickstarter because we just don't have the spare funds to do things from the ground up. I would love to get to the point where I don't have to, and if I can, I will. I definitely don't want to be one of those companies that every game's a Kickstarter, because I feel like if I can do it without Kickstarter and let other indies get out there, I should be doing that as much as possible.
Okay. I mean, that it sort of seems that that's the way things are going. You know, Chaosium's, you know, huge with Kickstarter, and, you know, Arc Dream and you know, Pelgrim Press. So, you know, these well-established companies, right. And just blowing it out of the park.
Well, yeah. And that's great, right? That, those companies are the reason Kickstarter is such a great ecosystem for games, is you have these customers who have only played Chaosium products coming in, and they back with Chaosium product, but then they come back and they check or they hear about it. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, you definitely need those big guys there, but there's a balance you have to meet. And, you know, one of my goals for the company has been, when we don't have to be there, we're going to pull out and make sure other people get a chance to do the same thing.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, that's pretty good philosophy if you can get to that point. And
right. I mean, if we never get to that point, then I'll always be on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But I would hope someday I can get to that point.
Well, that's not the worst thing in the world either, I guess, right? I mean, you get good exposure. You're out, you know, doing all the podcasting and stuff.
There's definitely a community and momentum aspect to Kickstarter that's hard to replicate outside of Kickstarter. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to have to see how I do that.
Yeah. How was your first Kickstarter experience? Did you go in knowing full well what was going to happen, or were you just, you know, blown away?
No, I had a really good idea. Working on Planet Mercenary for Hypernode Media, I was very involved. They're really good. I wasn't just like some dude they hired and then shoved to the side. I've involved from day one. You know, what do you think of the art? Things that I not contracted for, but they were definitely coming to me and saying, we realize the core of this game and the way it plays is you, and you've done a good job, but we want you to feel like the final vision is still something you believe in. And so they were very good. And so when there were struggles or hiccups, I was able to watch it and see what happened. We hired Patrick Capera from Crafty Games. He worked on Spycraft back in the day to do the editing for that game. And so working with Patrick gave me a lot of insight into, you know, oh, here's some hiccups, here's some things. And that's, if you look at the tiny line, our Kickstarters are pretty straightforward. We don't really add a lot of frills or fancy things. You know, we try to keep it as focused as possible, so there's no room for these mistakes. And it worked for our first one. It was a little overwhelming, just like the sheer, like, $12,000 is not that much in the realm of RPG Kickstarters. We're a small fish. Sure.
Right, right.
But it was definitely a little feeling of like, oh man, 400 people now need me to give them this thing that I promised. I've never had so many people I promised something to in my life.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I was going to say, I think you're about 300 backers or so on this current Kickstarter.
250.
As well? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're doing 250. We're doing good. But I was really pleased that, you know, the team, me and my wife, and then all our contractors who did the writing and stuff, that we delivered 4 months early. I mean, that's a big badge of honor that my first product, with minimal hiccups. We had a few minor snafus with some, like, we uploaded the wrong file to drive through at one point, so everybody downloaded the wrong PDF, and we had to go change it and tell them, hey, re-download, we goofed. I mean, and, you know, various, there's always typos in a book. You miss them. But for the most part, we haven't, you know, we delivered, I think we had one shipment that we had to resend because it came damaged. Like, other than that, we had a few missed packs that, you know, they happen, but we landed it. I feel, I would say at a scale of 1 to 100, I would give us a solid A-. Like, I think we hit it, and it felt very good to say I was early, I was on time, and everybody got what they were promised.
Right. That's a good feeling. And, you know, as long as you're communicating with the backers, you know, even if you weren't 4 months early, I think people tend to give you a little bit of leeway. I mean, Kickstarter being what it is, as long as there's that communication and people are just kind of kept in the loop, I think, you know, usually they're pretty happy.
No, and I definitely agree. You know, and I back Kickstarters that are late and I'm not upset, right? I back Kickstarters that come early, I think. Actually, I don't know if I have. I feel like I have. I back a lot of Kickstarters, so it's really hard to say.
Okay.
But, you know, like, it happens. Sometimes you make things and, you know, if your ship gets held up in port, what are you going to do? It's not my getting mad at you won't fix that for you, and it won't fix it for me. You know, yeah, a big company's Fantasy Flight has to move release dates around sometimes. Like, it's just what it is. So I definitely think as long as you're honest, you know, it's definitely okay. But I never want to be that company where people go, you know, it's been 3 years. Where's my game?
I think there's only been a couple of instances of that where people have just completely absconded with the money or ran out of money or couldn't deliver. I think they're few and far between.
I can think of a few, but that, I think you're right. I think they're definitely, you know, and it's a saying I used to hear a lot, you know, you're only late until somebody gets the book, but if you release a bad product, it's always going to be bad. And there's definitely some truth to that statement, right? Like, what do you, it just, that's the way it is. It's truth.
Right. So if we didn't have a Kickstarter right now, would you still be designing games?
I would be. I'd be trying to. It'd definitely be a lot harder. You know, the ability to say, hey, kind of raise in almost what are investor funds up front has been a big benefit to me. Because, I mean, I can afford to produce these games, but, you know, saying I've got to dump $6,000, $10,000 into this, that's buying a house. That's a down payment on a car. Like, you know, so Kickstarter has definitely provided me a medium that I didn't have before. But I was, I mean, I was designing rule sets. I wrote my first rule set back in 2007. Like, I've been doing, you know, it will never be published because it's just awful. It's probably the worst game ever written. But, you know, I was doing it back then, and I was going to try to release games back then even. So Kickstarter just made it easier on me.
Do you think that bigger companies like Fantasy Flight and things like that would be more open to, you know, indie designers now because of the success of Kickstarter to give people a chance so that they could, you know, sort of capture that and then not have you go to Kickstarter?
You know, that's super hard to say. I don't have any real experience with that particular side of it, I have to say. So
yeah,
I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah.
I definitely think there's more. I mean, Evil Hat picked up and John Harper's game that was kickstarted a couple years ago, Blades in the Dark, the other day. I saw a press release where they're like, now we're publishing this. You know, and he's never been published. I don't think he's had a solo project published by a major company like that before, right?
Right.
So there's definitely, and I see, you know, companies that they run their first Kickstarter and then they'll say, oh, we signed with so-and-so who's going to do our distribution, and you know, they're kind of, and then you'll see more games. So I definitely think there's this sense of how can we, big companies watching Kickstarter to find the next talent. I don't know, you know, if they're trying to kill Kickstarter necessarily. I think as long as it's not hurting them, they're probably okay to leave it alone. I would be. I'd be like, great. It's like kind of a proving ground to see who can do it.
I think it'd be easier for people to sort of get a foot in the door. You know, so many people, you know, do sandbox games at home and they're, you know, designing monsters and scenarios and all these things. Right. And like, you know, who doesn't want to work for D&D? But, you know, if you can publish something on your own, a Kickstarter, and then go to, you know, WotC or Fantasy Flight and say, hey, look, this is what I did. You know, it's not just my, you know, my notebook from at home. You know, it's a real thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a different medium. And I don't think it's been fully explored yet in that regard.
Okay. What do you think it is about gaming that, you know, is such a touchstone for people? And it seems, and I guess it's always been, but, you know, it seems like there's a renaissance now with Kickstarter and things like that. What do you think really gets to the heart of gaming, whether it's board gaming or RPG gaming?
Social. I'd say it's because it's social, right? Like, you kind of saw the pendulum swing, I think, growing up. I mean, I'm not that old. Growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was this big swing with video games, and LAN parties were suddenly this thing, and they weren't, you know, people were moving computers and Xboxes and to, you know, this version of online gaming where it's anonymous, not face-to-face. And I think you're seeing that. I think this is a pendulum swinging back. People going, I spend a lot of time talking to people I don't actually see.
Yeah.
You know, and how do I fix that? And, you know, board gaming and RPGs are a social activity where you get to address that while still playing a game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of why you're seeing the swing.
Okay. Shit, I had a thought and it went away. God damn it.
It happens.
Wow, it used to happen all the time. It's been better since it's been better on the show, although it's still terrible outside. I wanted to dovetail on something he said. I'll have to edit all this shit out maybe. I can't remember.
Social gaming, video games, young, swinging, I don't know, saying stuff.
Yeah, I don't, okay. Well, we'll just let it go. I agree. I agree with your sentiment. It is a social thing. I remember what it is. It's the social aspect of it, but almost to a person when we have people come on the show, you know, myself included, Vince included, we're all introverts. So it almost goes against our nature to do a social activity, but we get so much enjoyment from the social activity.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think with board games and role-playing games, there's a safe shell of a buffer with the rules and the interactions there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That probably make that easier than, you know, going to a club.
Yeah.
Right? And like, you can do these things at home where you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
And you have common ground, too. Like, you know, with things like Meetup now and Roll20 and, you know, we started a Meetup group, you know, sort of ancillary to the podcast. And even doing these things, you know, when we first started, and I'm not good in, you know, social situations necessarily. And you have all these strange people coming on and, you know, you got to do research and come up with questions. Like, wow, this was such a horrible idea. Why are we ever doing this? But it's been such a great experience because you have a common base to start from. You design games and play games and you're playing 40 different RPGs in a week. And, you know, it gives us a, you know, very common ground to start from. So it engenders conversation and then, you know, kind of brings us closer together.
Well, and it's that shared experience, right? Like we all, you know, we all kind of share that feeling of knowing what happens when that one shows up when you didn't want it to, or the nat 20 when you needed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's definitely a stronger foundation inside this community to build those bonds that there is in other types of communities.
Sure. And what's been your experience overall in social media with, you know, Kickstarter and Twitter and all those things? Do you see a lot of support for the things that you're doing with Tiny Frontiers and other stuff on the horizon?
Yeah, no, definitely. My friends probably hate me. Like my actual friends, they're probably like, stop talking about your crap, man. We don't care anymore. You make us play test it. We know. We get it. but yeah, it's definitely been good. Twitter is my, when you do a Kickstarter, you can actually check where people come from.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter and Facebook are both in my top five of ways I've been getting people to back my Kickstarter.
Oh, nice.
So there's definitely a connection. And it's definitely a way to engage with people. And like, I do this because I love what I do. Like, I don't make games because I'm rolling in dough at home.
Yeah.
and I'm making hand over fist and I'm going out to all the cool party places. You know, I do this because I love sitting down with my friends and having this kind of experience. And I want to give that to people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And to me, the best part of this job has been people I don't know coming to me and saying, hey, I got Tiny Frontiers. You know, we played it. We loved it. By the way, we're from Sweden.
Yeah.
And I would never have met these people.
Right, right.
You know, and I have somebody who got it posted a picture on our wall the other day of them in Italy on a train with the book. They were running the game on a train while they were traveling through Italy. I like that. I mean, it's just that social media allows me to engage with the community I'm trying to build.
Mm.
And not as some guiding father figure, but as just a participant. I just get to be there.
Right.
You know, and I definitely think that's a really valuable tool, especially for the small indie publisher.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's cool, you know, as well as Twitter and Facebook on Kickstarter as a backer. We do so many Kickstarter interviews and people are probably tired of hearing it, but you know, you guys are so accessible as creators to people who are backing your project. It's really cool. Like, you're not going to call Fantasy Flight or tweet to them and, you know, really get, you know, expect a response or, you know, potentially a change in rules or, hey, you know, I noticed blah, 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 whatever. But, you know, they tweet you or they send you a message on Kickstarter and like, hey, I noticed such and such, or, you know, hey, you know, whatever it is, but you're there. Like, you know, you're immediately responding, or not necessarily immediately, but, you know.
Right. Well, and that's definitely true. I mean, I've had some super positive interactions on social media with even bigger companies.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, Fantasy Flight has interacted with me. And not through as any designer, just as a fan, you know, tweeting about a event I was at. Mm-hmm. Cubicle 7, I posted a review of an RPG on my blog a year ago, and Cubicle 7 retweeted my review.
Nice.
You know, and said some nice things about it. Nocturnal Media, when I review, you know, I didn't even post it anywhere, and Greg Stafford, the guy who created Pendragon, linked my review on the Nocturnal Media forums and commented about it. And I was like, whoa. Like, so there's even the bigger companies are definitely out there. And I think it's so valuable to, I mean, you have to manage the expectation, right? As a creator, in the end, I'm making the product I'm making. I'm not responsible to necessarily do everything a particular fan wants, right? Like, right. In the end, as a creator and a business person, I have to protect the integrity of the product I'm trying to make. But there's a balance where you can include that community inclusion, and I think it's really important to try to meet that. And that's what I've been trying to do with Gallant Knight Games.
Cool. And to that end, or ancillary to that end, do you do any conventions, local conventions and things like that?
Yeah. Past few years I've been at, so I'm in Utah. Mm-hmm. They have Legend, no, that's your show, Legends of the Tabletop. That's not our show. Life, the Universe, and Everything, LTUE. I've been there over the past couple of years. I'm not sure if I'm going this year. It's every February. But I've spoken, given seminars, stuff like that. Gen Con the last 3 years. With the Planet Mercenary team, I was in the booth this year. We ran a bunch of games of Planet Mercenary at Gen Con. Those are really it for like major cons. I definitely should go to more, but I spend a less. It's that thing of I can go to a con, or I can stay at home and write for 3 days.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I got to do one of these two things. Which one is right now? I definitely hope to hit a point where I can go to more of these cons, though, in the near future. Like, I definitely want to get around and see these cons and meet these people and interact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool. And when did you start gaming yourself? You're super into RPGs and everything else. Did you start, you know, back when you were, you know, young teen or...
Yeah, so when I was 11, this is the first time I played an RPG. It was at a scout camp, like a Boy Scout camp.
Huh, okay.
And one night we're sitting around the fire, and we're like, we're 11-year-olds. We're like, we're idiots. We didn't know. We're like, we're so bored. This sucks. We're going to go home. Where are the video games? And we had I'm from North Dakota, where it's really small. So the scout camps are always like a bunch of small, like, four-man scout groups from different towns within, like, 3 hours. We just kind of all just clustered because there wasn't enough of us to do anything.
Sure.
And so it wasn't a guy from my troop, my scout troop, but somebody else from a different town was, said, well, I've got this game we can play. And I've played board games. And he's like, it's Dungeons & Dragons. I had no idea what it was. I still remember my character's name. I think I still have the character sheet somewhere.
That's cool.
But yeah, it was like this eye-opening experience. It was 3.0 had just come out, and that's what we played.
Okay.
And it was like this eye-opening, like, whoa.
It's opened up a whole new world then.
Oh yeah. Like, there's rules for playing imagination. Like, right. Like, somebody made, it's like those people who made the little like skateboard fingerboard things. Like, somebody made money off of this? Like, really?
Yeah. Well, more rules than, you know, when they started with, like, say, first edition, you know, and they went so far the other way to, like, fourth. It's like, there's a rule for everything.
Yeah, Evelyn, I mean, it, like, just like the social gaming, right? It's going to always swing in pendulums. And I think there's a place for crunchy games, and I think there's a place for narrative games. And I think there's a place for some games in the middle. And as long as you're gaming and having fun and you're not being a dick,
yeah,
great, right? Like, I don't care what game you play, as long as you're being a positive participant in the hobby.
Sure. Did you play Fourth and did you like it or no?
So I'm gonna temper my response here. So first, yes, I have played Fourth Edition.
Okay.
I ran it and played it. So my response now. As a game designer, I think it's a super well-made game mechanically. I don't think it fit the Dungeons & Dragons brand.
Okay.
I think when they put the label of Dungeons & Dragons on it, I expected a different experience than what I got, and that's why it felt dissatisfying to me. But mechanically, I think the rules were very well done, and I enjoyed them.
Okay, that's interesting. That's what got me back into gaming was 4th Edition. With a fury at that point to make up for so many wasted years, so to speak.
Right. Well, and you know, a lot of people have this need to like kind of bash the game they don't like. And just because I don't think 4th Edition fits how I always saw Dungeons & Dragons doesn't mean it's a bad game. If you like it and your group wants to play and you're spending hours playing, great. Like, that's awesome. Play more. Like, buy all the books. Those get off my nose. Have fun. Tell me your awesome story.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in making you feel bad because you like a different game than me.
Right, right. No, that's cool. Yeah, do you have a favorite either genre of game or just a favorite game in general, like is it D&D or you know, something else?
So my single favorite role-playing game is Pendragon.
Okay.
I'm a big fan. I'm a history student educationally and just like for fun on the side. And Arthurian mythos and the King Arthur legends were always of exceptional interest to me. I love knights, gallant knight games.
Right.
And so just Pendragon, I love the rules. I love the setting. I love the kind of stories it tells. It fits what I love the most. So definitely Pendragon is my favorite RPG. Genre-wise, and I got everything. I don't think I have a lot of science fiction games. I have a lot of fantasy games, but I also think those are probably the most produced in the market.
Yeah, probably.
Right. So, you know, there's definitely more of those in other types of games. So it's hard to say.
Okay. It's probably changing a little bit nowadays with, you know, things like Kickstarter and stuff like that. They're certainly easier to find other options, I think, at this point.
Yeah. No, there's definitely you don't have to, you know, you can rush off to drive through and pick up a PDF of a game for $15, $10 and go, I hate this. No skin off my nose.
Right.
Definitely changed the way we have to approach them.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're designing, do you pull aspects from different systems that you've played and try to amalgamate those things? Or it has to influence your design as you're looking at new systems, right?
Sure. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm definitely not ashamed to say, you know, this piece of this game derives some level of influence from a different game, but I would never take a mechanic without permission, right? Even though technically that's legal, it's just, you know, I would definitely put like this mechanic is inspired by or something, you know, but, like, if you look at Planet Mercenary, I've been very open that the biggest influences on Planet Mercenary were Paranoia, Traveler, you know, and then, what's the third one I always say? I don't remember.
I don't know. Paranoia,
Traveler, I don't know. There's a third one. It's on there somewhere.
Okay. Sure,
but that's fair. I haven't actually talked about Planet Mercenary in this aspect for a long time because we wrapped the Kickstarter and the game's, like, getting ready to go to print. So, like, I haven't had to have a publicity talk about it.
Right.
But every game obviously Tiny Frontiers is highly influenced by Tiny Dungeon because we license the rule set.
Sure.
But you can definitely see pieces of other games, components I liked where I was like, ooh, I like that idea, but I need to change it to make it fit what I'm trying to do. So how am I going to do that?
Right. Okay. That makes sense. You know, I ask the board game guys that all the time too, because it just seems like you would, you know, even if you're not thinking about it consciously, subconsciously, at least, you know, kind of right. pull different pieces and parts together and try to make them into a new whole.
Yeah. And one of my big design questions I always ask myself is, you know, when I look at that, I go, okay, this is like this rule from another game. Am I doing it better? If not, why am I doing this? And should I just do it that way? Right? Like, if I'm not doing something better than a game that does the same thing, why am I making this game? Just go play the game that does it best.
Mm-hmm. Cool. We should probably circle back around to the Kickstarter. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, character creation, what's involved sure. in this new rule set here and all that kind of stuff?
Sure. So like the name says, it's all about giant robots and giant monsters. So character creation is picking your what we call a chassis, is sort of the base frame that you're going to build from. And a chassis dictates a lot of the abilities you get, how many different types of systems you have, stuff like that. So you pick a chassis, and then you pick a bunch of systems that plug in, and we have four different types of systems. Every chassis has different amounts. So the really fast, light chassis has less hit points, but it has more movement systems than any other chassis, stuff like that. And there's a pre-generated list of systems that you just pick from, and they're all balanced against each other. And you try to build combos, and you can customize it. Be like, my little mech has swarm missiles. Well, my mech has a retractable sword. Right? My kaiju has red atomic breath. My kaiju has blue atomic breath. and they are different. And those are a little homage to the old Godzilla movies. But it's really that simple. And then you're kind of done. and you play.
Okay.
it's just like tiny for like it's really to the point. It's definitely designed to tell stories about the robots, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's no rules for playing the pilots. Those are all in Tiny Frontiers. If you want to tell stories about spaceships and the pilots, you got to have Tiny Frontiers, which right. is why it's only $5 right now on DriveThruRPG, by the way. So normally 15, okay. we put it down to $5 the whole Kickstarter. So if anybody's listening and they want to just see what it's like, $5, you know, price of a drink, just skip your morning coffee run.
Yeah.
You can check it out.
If you're going to Starbucks, you could pick up two copies.
Right? Get a copy for you and a friend. Hey, I'm fine with that. but that's really it. Like, the rules don't come out to much more than Tiny Frontiers. So.
Okay. So you're going to roll 2d6. That's the system.
Yep. Same base dice system. Okay. You roll 2d6. If either dice shows a 5 or 6, you succeed on the action. If they don't, you fail. If you have something that grants you advantage, be it situational, equipment, whatever, you get an extra dice. If you have a situation that would give you a disadvantage, you only roll one dice. And disadvantage does override advantage. So if you have both, okay. you always have to take the disadvantage.
All right. Well, would the disadvantage then cancel the advantage in such a way that you'd still have your two dice, or are you still down to one die then?
At any point where you have disadvantage and advantage, you always have to roll one dice.
Okay.
The disadvantage just flat out overrides. And that's a math balancing factor. Because some systems will say, do this with advantage. But there's a defense mode where you can say, all attacks against me have disadvantage. And so it really was just too good for the weapons to say have advantage sometimes. Because then there wasn't really a drawback when you tried to defend.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense.
That's the base system. Hit points are, I think the biggest mech has 10 hit points, 12 hit points. Like, and weapons do anywhere from one damage, 1d3 damage, or 1d6 damage, depending on the weapon system you pick. And, that's the whole game. Like, it's definitely minimalist. We try to live up to our name as much as possible.
So you get in that robot and smash up that monster.
or get in a monster and smash up a robot. I mean, there you go. Either way.
That'd be an interesting game with a couple of players at the table playing either side.
We ran a game where the players all played monsters, and what happened was those nasty humans stole all their eggs from Monster Island. So they had to go to Tokyo and try to find their eggs. And of course, finding your eggs means, you know, knocking over a bunch of buildings to see where they stuck your eggs.
Like you do.
Right, as you do. And that was a lot of fun. So we ran a little 3-session playtest of that.
That sounds like fun. And talking about the Kickstarter, $25 gets you a soft cover version of the rule book, a GM screen, 6 custom dice, a PDF copy of the rules, and on all the unlocked digital stretch goals. That's not a bad deal.
Nope. Minimalist also refers to the price you pay, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to put a game in your hands, and we're here to do it economically for you and for us. I mean, we're still trying to make money, and we're going to make money.
Sure.
But we're definitely not out to say, I mean, you're going to get a 130-page book for $25 plus shipping. Plus you get the PDF, mm-hmm. plus you get dice. You know. I'm a big fan of the deluxe pledge level, the $60 pledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite because you get it's the soft cover, but you also get a faux leather hardcover that's kind of a fancy, the one you don't use at the table, but the one you say, hey, look how special I am.
Right.
So you get 2 copies of the same game, one for play, one for personal use. 6 dice. It all fits in this custom-made bag. So you can fit the dice, the game, the GM screen, all of it goes in the bag for easy storage. And the bags, you know, maybe the I don't have one in here. Oh. Well, I would show you if I had one in here, but apparently I'm ill-prepared. But it's maybe the size of, like, this book. Like, it's just you can fit the whole book and everything in this bag, and it's great.
Oh, that's cool. Easily portable. You throw it in your backpack, and you're on your way.
It's great for cons, for travel, anything like that.
Nice. And the dice look pretty cool, too. Did you think about putting those as an add-on for the Kickstarter?
Yep. All the items you get in the Kickstarter are also available as an add-on, except for the bag and the leather bound. Those are deluxe level only. Those are Kickstarter exclusives. We don't sell those after the Kickstarter's over.
Gotcha. So you got to get in there and get it now. $60 gets you all that cool stuff.
Yep. We have the crazy pledge level. If you want to give us and throw money at us, you can do the $250 pledge level where you get a custom piece of art from Tan Ho Sim and you get to build a pre-gen character or monster that goes in the game.
That sounds like an interesting thing. Is that a limited tier or is
there's
that open?
There's 5 of each. There's 5 for Kaiju and 5 for Mecha. And you can get in there and we'll work with you to get the character, obviously within reason. Yeah, nothing inappropriate, and we'll help you make the art again. Nothing inappropriate, but you'll get a wallpaper of the art, and it'll be in the game forever.
That's people with bigger budgets, there you go. You got a nice pledge level. You get your maybe you get your face on the Kaiju,
basically, except not really.
That's all right. Well, maybe you could like the Latin version of your name or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Cool. That's cool. Like I said, inexpensive. So and it looks like a fun game. I mean, you know, like I said, cinematic and you know, minimalistic. So you get in. It's, you know, I read it in an hour. So, you know, if you're going through it and you know want to get a good one shot game, your normal group doesn't show up and you're like, you know, we've got 3 people. Let's play Tiny Frontiers for 2 hours. Like very low learning curve.
Yeah, and that's really why we built it. This is not a game you're going to run a 3-year campaign in.
Right.
And, you know, we've been really upfront about that. Like, I tell people when they get it, they're like, how long do I play? I'm like, I would never run a campaign of this past, like, 12 sessions. Like, done. Like, I run one-offs or, like, little 3-session, we're in the middle of something, we just need a little break, whatever. Like, yeah, this is not a game for campaigns like that at all.
Right. Do you prefer to play as GM or do you prefer to play as player?
I like both. I mean, I primarily GM lately because we're usually playtesting.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean, the Sunday game I get to play in and my every, like, once or twice a month Saturday game I get to play in. So those are a lot of fun for me.
Cool. Lets you recharge the batteries a little bit creatively, I guess?
Yeah. Recharge the batteries. You know, just hang out, have a little bit of – take a step back and it's important to remember why the game is fun, right? Like, that definitely keeps me in the – plus I learned, like, you know, our GM for our Saturday game hasn't GM'd a game in 20 years. This is the first one they're GMing since they came back to the hobby, and it's been really interesting to – I've learned a lot just watching them. And I've been GMing for, you know, since I started playing, really. And right. I consider myself a pretty good GM. Like, I think I'm okay. You know, Steve Jackson said I was pretty good, so
I'm gonna keep that
humble brag forever.
Should get that like cross stitch or embroidered on a shirt or something.
The internet is forever. It is on the internet. So it's there. There's definitely, it's nice to not do it and to kind of recharge and be like, this is why it's fun. I'm learning something. I get to experience it. And it's just nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's less stressful because you just show up and play. Like you could just right. be immersed and, you know, kind of get into a character. I was running a 4E campaign for a long time and, you know, every Saturday we would play and it was like the whole day up until game time was preparing and printing and going over notes and making sure I had all my minis portioned out and, you know, doing all the stuff. So it's its own kind of fun because I'm the type A, like I want to create, combat encounters and try to put a story together. And, you know, I was sandboxing the whole thing. That has its own level of enjoyment. But just being able to sit and play, so much better.
Yeah, it's definitely nice. I will admit that.
All right. I'm pretty much wrapped up here. We do have our final five questions, but if you want to give us all of your contact information, where people can find you and all that stuff, obviously we have stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, so gallantnightgames.com. You can find us on Facebook under Gallant A Games, Twitter under Gallant K Games. Apparently you can't spell it all out. Twitter doesn't like that many letters. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm on alanbarr.net. You can find me on Twitter as just at alanbarr. You can email me at alan@gallantnightgames.com with any questions. If you want to yell at me and tell me I'm an idiot and I sound like a fool on this podcast, don't ever come back. Great. I will happily respond to your email and apologize. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty reachable. And obviously you can back my Kickstarter and then you can message me there. That's mm-hmm. probably the best way to get a hold of me, actually. So go back to the Kickstarter so you can contact me if you need to.
There you go. And give all that positive feedback for that awesome looking Kickstarter with beautiful, beautiful art.
Yeah, the art is awesome.
All right, we'll roll into our final five here. I have five geeky/nerdy questions for you. Okay. It's just kind of a yes or no, but it could be yes and, you know, yes because or no because or whatever.
All right, I'm excited. Lay them on me.
All right, the first one is Star Trek or Star Wars?
Star Trek.
Okay. Any particular? Well, you're a little bit younger than I am. Any particular reason why Star Trek?
I just loved the optimism of Star Trek, even as a kid. I love Star Wars. Don't get me wrong. Laser swords, magic space knights, all over that. Like, right. I love me some Star Wars, and I can talk Star Wars nerdom with the best of them. But I definitely, something about Star Trek and its final frontierness really grabbed me as a kid.
Okay. Clean and neat and organized and optimistic. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah, definitely.
Did you watch the original series? Did you go back and watch the original series?
Yeah, I used to, when I was little, I used to watch them as reruns at my grandparents' because they had cable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched them with my dad.
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up, Voyager was airing when I really started watching TV on my own. So Voyager was the first series I kind of watched.
Yeah.
But, yeah, definitely love Star Trek.
How do you feel about the new movies? Did they ruin the original Star Trek with the reboots, do you think, or are you on board with those?
I don't feel like they ruined anything. I mean, the other stuff's still there. It's not like it went away.
Yeah.
You know, I really loved the newest one. I thought it captured the essence of classic Star Trek. Didn't love Into Darkness. I was kind of on it. The first one was fine, though. I enjoyed the first one, too. Like, I'm not I have a lot of opinions, but I don't tend to have negative opinions. I'm either like, I'm okay, or I really love this thing. Like, if I'm okay, mm-hmm. I can just leave it. Like, whatever. But, right. You know, I don't go out and be like, oh, it sucks. You all suck for liking this. that's not the kind of person I've ever been.
Wait a minute. Aren't you on the internet? Like, that's totally what you're supposed to do.
I'm the one reasonable person hanging out here, I guess. But I enjoyed the first one. Didn't love Into Darkness, and I absolutely adored the latest one.
And the last one is more of like, you know, Team Star Trek as opposed to, you know, Kirk Star Trek. That's my understanding.
Yeah. I, you know, if you haven't seen it, I would, I mean, I liked it more than The Force Awakens. So, but again, Star Trek over Star Wars for me. So, but if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. I think you should watch it.
Okay, cool. For whatever reason, I just never caught it. I like the new movies. I thought they did a pretty good job. I mean, you know what you're going to get.
Come on this podcast again.
I didn't realize Force Awakens is on Stars right now. I was flipping through the channels to see what was on. I'm like, oh, shit, Star Wars is on.
Hey.
Let me record that.
Yeah. Yeah, I should probably buy that eventually.
Do you know, are they going to do a special edition for that? Because that's kind of what I've been waiting for.
My inside contacts at Disney have let me know. No, I got nothing.
Yeah, some people are on Amazon or, you know, all into the, special release. When I see it and it's a special edition, I'm like, oh, I'll grab that. Until then, I'm like, I don't know.
I buy all the Marvel stuff, so, like, whatever.
Okay, well, that'll segue into this one then.
Oh.
DC or Marvel?
Oh, Marvel. I am a Captain America. Let me show you. If you took a look over here, a little shrine.
Oh, Captain there you America. Go.
So, I am a Marvel Captain America fanboy to the day I die.
Okay. That one was easy. Tabletop or video games?
Tabletop. Yep. I have video games. I dink around on them, but I don't think I spend more than maybe an hour a week playing video games tops. I just rather do other things.
Okay. Sci-fi or fantasy?
Ooh, man. I'm actually going to say fantasy.
Really?
Yes. From a personal perspective, I adore fantasy. I love science fiction just as much. Like, that's a really hard one. Like, I don't know. I love them both for different reasons. They tell different kinds of stories that I think are equally important to me.
Sure, sure. Now, are you in the Tolkien-esque high fantasy or urban fantasy or just all of it together?
I just love reading. So Dresden Files, the urban fantasy stuff, all over that. Personally, I'm a massive Tolkien fan. C.S. Lewis, Chronicles of Narnia, Wheel of Time, like kind of the epic-y high fantasy I really love.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite author is David Gemmell, who writes kind of heroic, not so epic fantasy, but definitely not gritty fantasy either. So,
okay. If you like the urban stuff, Charles DeLint is amazing.
Well, I am going to throw that on my list right now.
Yep. Charles, it's DE space LINT.
Like DeLint in my washer. Okay.
DeLint in your washer.
He is the modern master of urban fantasy. Wow. That's a.
I've been reading him for, I don't know, 20 plus years, and he's amazing. I mean, I love it. And actually, we're working on getting him on the show. So hopefully, a little bit later this year, we're gonna have Charles on the show.
That'd be awesome. Wow, this man is prolific. Wow, that's a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll have to find a happy place to start that.
Moonheart was the first one that I ever read. Sucked me in on the first page.
All right. Well, I will. Maybe I'll start there.
My opinion, anyway. I mean, whatever.
Hey, I'm always happy to take a book recommendation. I love something good to read. So,
and the nice thing about him is he does, young adult fiction as well,
okay. But
it's not dumbed down.
Sure.
It's a little bit more action oriented because you want to suck the kids in right away. Like, the adult fiction's, a little bit more of a slow burn, but it has the same sort of theme and stuff to it. I don't know. I think everything he does is really good.
Hey, I'll take a look at it.
All right. And if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, I've never actually really thought about that super hard. Huh. Is being Captain America a superpower?
I guess it could be.
Because all his power is from one source.
I'll take it.
That would be Captain America.
There you go. You already have the shield. I mean, what the hell?
I'm halfway there. That's all it takes, right? Shield? I can do that.
Yeah, right? Could put on some, red and blue pajamas, whatever.
You think I don't have those already? You are sorely mistaken.
That's awesome.
Flying would be fun. Like, it seems like flying would be pretty cool. Just from a look what I can do standpoint, Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's hard to say.
I've never really thought about it either. And I ask these questions and I dread when somebody would flip the question. I don't know. I only ask the questions.
But it's hard, right? Because flying would be pretty cool. Laser eyes would be really cool.
Very situational.
But you think that, right? But they're probably not. Instead of a microwave, laser eyes. Got to heat up my cup of Joe. Laser eyes. Start a fire while camping. Laser eyes.
Oh, when you put it like that.
Got cold. Laser eyes. there's a lot of uses for laser eyes.
Okay. Unless you have to wear the special visor because you'll literally melt everything in the world.
If I want heat vision laser eyes, like Superman.
Superman, there you go. Okay.
Cyclops laser eyes are a totally different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't pick those if I'm picking my own power.
Yeah, you have to pay extra for that.
I feel like they have to refund me some if I have to wear special glasses, right? Is that how it works?
But they look really cool, though.
They totally do. And Cyclops is my favorite X-Men, so I'm not bagging on Cyclops.
Mean it's not Wolverine? Come on.
He's so I'm Wolverine. Not my bad.
I'm a Batman guy, so it's all lost on me. But not Ben Affleck Batman. Although I didn't see it, but I'm not a big fan of his.
Actually, so Batfleck I thought was the best Batman.
Really?
I walked out and went, wow, that's my favorite Batman ever.
Huh.
I don't like Batman very much. I was I actually watched him. For me, Batmans have always been either they're a really good Batman or they're a really good Bruce Wayne. They're never really good at both, right? George Clooney, terrible Batman, pretty good Bruce Wayne. Val Kilmer was kind of middle of the road at both. Michael Keaton was a great Batman, but he was a pretty bad Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
It wasn't ever awesome. And then Christian Bale was, when I could understand him, he seemed okay.
I like that series the best.
It's a good series. I'm just saying, I think Ben Affleck gets both halves of Batman better than anybody I've seen.
That's interesting. You may be forcing me to watch that horrible movie.
If it helps you feel better, he's the one bright, shining spot. And Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's awesome.
She's in it just a little bit, right?
She's in it enough that I was happy she was in it.
Okay.
It wasn't hey, Wonder Woman, throw away, we're going to... But she actually, fought in the last, 30-minute scene.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I mean, she wasn't in there. I mean, they don't really show everybody every minute of it. She's maybe there for 10 minutes of the 30 minutes. I don't know. But, she was in that fight scene probably as much as Superman was.
Okay. All right. That'll be an HBO watch for me.
There you go.
Have to check that out. All right. That's all I've got, although I do want to thank you for coming on and spending the time, and we're hoping we can help to drum up some business for your Kickstarter, push you on to those extra stretch goals.
Oh, hey, it was my pleasure. I definitely enjoyed the fireside chat feel of this. This was great.
Yeah, we try to keep it, super informal because I'm just some dude sitting in his friggin' studied, interviewing people about Kickstarter stuff, so it's very low stress.
Yeah, so it's I loved it. I'd love to come back when I have another project to talk about.
Absolutely, keep us on your list, and you've always got a spot here.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Cool. Again, thanks for coming on, and let everybody know how they can find this if they're not already watching. So you go to legendsoftabletop.com for this interview and all of our other cool stuff that we have. You can reach out to us at legendsoftabletop@gmail.com with your questions, comments, and feedback. We're on Twitter, Instagram, all the social media things. If you could rate us or review us on iTunes, that is super helpful. That bumps us up in the standings. I know you guys are tired of hearing it, but it's absolutely true. So we appreciate that. We have a full week this week. Rogue Blade Games is going to be on tomorrow night with Leah. Manted Magazine is also going to be on Thursday with Leah. And next week we have America's GM, David Krennan from Crit Juice and Never Tell Me the Odds. Never Tell Me the Odds. Star Wars podcast, so we're looking forward to all that cool stuff coming up. And we just keep rolling right on through the end of the year. We'll add people as we can, I said earlier, we're trying to get Charles DeLint on, so I'm looking forward to that. You can check out all of our old podcasts at our SoundCloud feed, so you can search for us there. And we appreciate everybody checking this out, and we'll catch you next time.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.
You're listening to Legends of Tabletop.
Oh, I need you to do it again. I don't think we were live yet.
Oh, man, I was already. All right, here we go.